On March 25, 1990, a brief and garbled radio distress call was received by several of Coast Guard stations on the Cape and Islands. A hoax call immediately followed, and believing the two calls were connected, the Coast Guard did not respond. Several days later, the fishing vessel Sol Amar, with local fisherman William Hokey Hokanson and his son Billy aboard, was reported overdue, and a massive search was initiated. By then, it was too late. The bodies of Hokey and Billy Hokanson were never found. And as a result of the tragedy, the Coast Guard changed its search and rescue procedures, and an anti-hoax law was enacted. Retired Captain Russell Webster of the U.S. Coast Guard has co-authored a book with his wife, Elizabeth Webster, about the incident titled The Sol Amar Tragedy off Martha's Vineyard. He joins us on the phone from his home in Maine. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Mindy. Thanks for having me.
Sure. Now, you mentioned in the preface that the impetus to write this book was that there was no written account of this incident with the U.S. Coast Guard historian. So why do you think this slipped through the cracks?
Well, I'm not sure it slipped entirely through the cracks. There are lessons learned that have been incorporated into their training curricula down in Yorktown, Virginia. But their history program is not as robust as other services are in terms of the number of people and resources committed to it. And this particular case is coming up on its 25th year anniversary, so it's in the lexicon of all things historical. It's not truly a piece of their fabric or history just yet. It's just not a case that's old enough to have their attention. And that's one of the reasons Beth and I wanted to write the book, was to memorialize the case for the Coast Guard and for the families involved.
Right. So tell us a little bit more about Hokey and Billy. They both seem to be quite the practical jokesters.
Yeah, it was very ironic that Hokey and Billy were, their demise was precipitated by a local prankster transmitting on low power on a low-power radio in the Woods Hole area, because both of them, and especially the father, Hokey Hokanson, would sometimes use the radio to mislead other fishermen as to where they were fishing on a particular occasion, because, as we all know, fishing can be very, very competitive at times. But and so it was somewhat ironic that their ultimate demise was precipitated by a hoaxer or perhaps a prankster back in 1990. And that problem continues for the Coast Guard year over year. The number of hoax calls that the Coast Guard gets has increased since 1990, when they first began collecting records on hoax calls after the Sol Amar case.
Yeah. That's, I think, one of the things that I found so interesting in the book, is that there are a lot more hoax calls than you would think.
Yeah, it's Beth and I dedicated the second chapter to domestic terrorism, the anatomy of hoax callers, because we felt, based on our research, that this was a national problem. It certainly is still a big problem with the Coast Guard. They have much better technology these days to help differentiate those calls that are being originated on water or from land that are obviously pranks. But if you look inside our culture, you'll find that cottage industries have been built up for pranking people. If you go to a common website called prank.com, for a small fee, you can precipitate a series of pranks on friends and family that I think create a culture that is making this more mainstream. And I think the most recent circumstance that I've seen where this is happening with terrible consequences, the phenomenon called swatting, where people are actually calling in very serious situations, such that tactical SWAT teams are coming in and surprising unaware people that calls have been made unnecessarily. And these, of course, waste resources and put people in peril.
Absolutely. Hokey and Billy were fishing for flounder off No Man's Land, the island to the southwest of the vineyard. What do we know about the final hours of their voyage?
Well, what we know is within 45 minutes of Billy's final call, his distress call at 9:18 p.m., he met up with a fellow fisherman and who passed the Solimar and Billy Hokanson a piece of fishing equipment. And in the last hour or so, the only thing we really know for sure is that Hokey and Billy were observed not fishing and mending their nets quietly on the stern of the vessel. And not much more than that is known at this time.
And so Billy managed to get a quick distress call. So tell us what happened. Talk us through what happened. The distress call was received, and then shortly thereafter there was this hoax call.
Yeah, it was almost a cascading series of errors after Billy precipitated his four-second heavily garbled distress call. It was received by three Coast Guard stations, one in Menemsha, one Menemsha Martha's Vineyard, the other on Nantucket, and the third at Woods Hole. The station at Nantucket actually got what's called a line of bearing towards the distress call. And the fourth station was a non-government station from an individual on Cuttyhunk Island who actually heard a part of the distress call and later was the individual who reported the vessel overdue with some very precise information that allowed the Coast Guard to go back and check its tapes. So shortly after Billy's call, about a minute, 20 seconds, a prankster came on Channel 16, which is the distress frequency, and said, "Yeah, Coast Guard, I'm sinking." And then there was laughter heard in the background. And unfortunately, the Coast Guard decision maker at Woods Hole dismissed and connected the two calls, unfortunately, to Billy and Hokey's demise.
And the hoaxer was never found. We don't know who that was.
No, they don't. And what's interesting, I think, is we're not even sure whether that hoaxer heard the original distress call. He may have been reacting to the Coast Guard stations that were frantically trying to call out to the fishing vessel or station that was reporting itself in trouble. So the only station to ever heard the prank caller was Woods Hole. So there clearly was enough information to say there were two separate calls at the time, one that was heard by only one Coast Guard station and one that was heard by four parties.
The sinking of the Solimar happened over 24 years ago, almost 25, you said, and technology has really come a long way in that time. Before we talk about technological improvements to the Coast Guard response, how did the Coast Guard change their procedures for responding to distress calls and presumed hoaxes immediately following this incident?
Well, the like any other government procedure, what they did is a careful and exhaustive review afterwards. And they determined that their future policy within 3 days after the event would be that every case where a call came in, whether they believed in their heart or minds that the case was a prank call, would be pursued as if it were legitimate until there were multiple levels of review to exclude the possibility that it was a legitimate call. So in the 1990 case, you had an individual who made the decision at Woods Hole without any higher-level authority validating that particular decision. That was the first change. The first change was that they would pursue every case as if it were legitimate, no matter how ridiculous it sounds. And I think the piece of reality there is, when people are in distress, sometimes they don't sound normal. And second, the change procedure required multiple layers of review and validation.
The late Congressman Jerry Stutz became very involved after the sinking of the Solimar, and ultimately the Stutz Act was passed in response to this incident. Tell us what the act did.
Well, it's truly a remarkable story where Jerry Stutz and Billy Towson at the time held hearings in the Woods Hole area at Huey and basically ramrodded through legislation within about 7.5 months of the actual sinking, something that I think by today's congressional standards is completely unheard of and may not be possible. So what they did was they created an amendment to the Coast Guard Authorization Act that made it a federal offense, punishable up to 6 years in prison, a $250,000 fine, and for the individual who's convicted of this felony to compensate the Coast Guard for the cost of the rescue. And in general sense, operating a boat, airplane, or cutter is hugely expensive, up to, I'd say, $10,000 an hour. So launching rescue resources unnecessarily is incredibly costly to the taxpayer.
Mm. The bodies of Hokie and Billy Hokanson were never found, but a volunteer crew did find the sunken vessel. And I thought this was really interesting, with the help of a SEAL. I had never heard this before.
Yeah, this the entire Hokanson family is deeply rooted in some other level of spirituality. And there are several instances throughout the book where it's apparent to anyone who has a inkling or bent about a spiritual world that this is a family that sometimes apparently crosses boundaries. But the volunteer crew went out there in the research vessel Marlin, and they had a reasonably good idea where to start. But I think anybody who has looked for any type of object on the bottom understands that it's like finding a needle in a haystack. And that was the name of an article by Beth David, a journalist, who wrote about how that volunteer crew found the Solimar. And what I think is amazing is they had done their best based on the information that the fellow fishermen had provided them about the previous evening, a fellow named Dave Butcher. And they were out there and they were having some type of mechanical difficulty with a remotely operated vehicle. And they were sort of in a quandary as to where to search exactly when this SEAL appeared off the quarter of the research vessel, far from any rocky environment where they're normally found, and basically circled the boat once and then departed. And the entire crew, to a person, said, "Why don't we search where this SEAL was first seen?" And you can see the picture in the book of the SEAL alongside the research vessel. They put the ROV down with the camera, and on the first pass, they discovered the quarterboard that had the Solimar's name on it. And everyone, to a person, in that crew was awestruck by that particular circumstance.
Mm. There were several theories as to why the boat sank, and you've looked at this incident pretty thoroughly. What do you think was the cause?
I think the most reasonable explanation is that the vessel began fishing and somehow got caught up on one of the two known wrecks on the bottom. You know, with the following seas and winds, the vessel probably squatted down, allowing water to come in over the aft end, which probably shorted out the power source for the radio, which is why we never got more than a single brief phone call or a radio distress call from the vessel. And the vessel itself, they had a dog, two dogs on board, including a puppy, and they'd unfortunately covered up the scuppers where the water can flow out. So I think due to a tragedy of circumstance and cascading errors, the water came in over the stern, flooded the main areas below, and sank the vessel quite quickly.
Technology, as we mentioned, has come a long way. Can you explain how the Coast Guard now is not only better equipped to pinpoint the location of distress calls from vessels, but we've also addressed this, there was at that time, 1968, known what they call black hole radio coverage gaps.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one of the reasons I became interested in the case when I took over a group with Seoul in 1998 was that as a communications specialist, I wanted to validate that those problems in this case, which I was just becoming aware of at the time, 8 years after the disaster, had been fixed. And when I got to Woods Hole, we had the Coast Guard Auxiliary, the volunteer arm in the Coast Guard, go out and do surveys off of Nomans, and we determined that that black hole where Billy and Hokey had transmitted this distress call was still there and very much a problem for mariners who had an urgent need to communicate in that area. So what we did at the time was, after we validated that it was a problem, we moved a antenna system from the Woods Hole area over to Peaked Hill on Martha's Vineyard, and that fixed it and was an interim fix before a national program fixed all of the high sites, what are called radio high sites, that provide urgent communications between mariners and shore stations within 20 miles in 2010, which was the final installation of something called the National Distress System, or Rescue 21 is the current name for the project. So today, the technology is much, much better in terms of the clarity of what and how the Coast Guard can hear things, and also, of course, where calls are coming from. And I think that's the most critical aspect relative to Solimar.
Mm. And, of course, since 1990, regulations for fishing vessels has also changed. They're now required to carry emergency position indicating radio beacons. So how do they work?
Well, the Solimar had what was called an EPIRB at the time. And I think Hokey Hokanson had the latest technology, and both for fishing and for survival, and was frankly ahead of most of the unregistered type fishing vessels that he was sailing in. EPIRBs work through a satellite-based system today, and operating on what's called 406 megahertz. And basically, those EPIRBs can work in a number of ways. They can be hydrostatically released if the vessel sinks and the EPIRB senses that water is activating its battery, and then hopefully the EPIRB can float free from a vessel and activate. And there are also new what are called PPIRBs, or personal electronic position indicating radio beacons, that are the size of a watch or the size of a iPhone that individuals can carry with them, such that the old-style EPIRBs could, in fact, float away from people who are in the water or in a life raft, whereas the PPIRBs can stay with them. So what happens is today, within 45 to 60 minutes, these satellites that are orbiting constantly receive that information and pass that information, both locating and also timestamp it. And if it's properly registered, we'll also pass the vessel name and information back directly to the Coast Guard through a ground station.
The book is Solimar, Tragedy Off Martha's Vineyard, written by retired Captain Russell Webster of the U.S. Coast Guard and his wife, Elizabeth. And you and Beth will be signing copies of the book at the Working Waterfront Festival, and we'll look forward to seeing you there. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Mindy. Thanks again.
I'm Mindy Todd. Thanks for listening.